Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. Today is July 28th in the year 2019. Howdy doody, everyone. I'm glad you're back and listening to me. I'm on, you know something? I discovered that I'm actually on iTunes. I'm on that. I'm not sure if it's updated. I don't know what's going on. I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. I don't have Todd the engineer to harangue me and make sure I do everything right. So I got to keep giving him a call and say, Todd, what did I screw up? Help me unscrew it, please. So that's where I'm at. I'll get it all figured out. I'll get it posted on armchairsurvivalist.com, and I'll let everybody know there where I'm broadcasting and how they can pick me up. But usually you could just go to armchairsurvivalist.com. You can listen live in the chat room there. And well, it's not really live because all my shows are recorded now. I don't have an engineer, so that's until we get everything else figured out, it's going to be most of the time you won't even know, except I won't have any calls in. And you can listen to my past shows. On the left-hand side of my page, you'll see the little Nipper dog and the RCA Victor Nipper dog. That's the name, the dog's name, Nipper. You click on that, and you'll be able to listen to the archives, whichever shows that are recorded. I think I have the last show I did last year and the first show I did this year. I think that's what's up there right now. Realize, guys, this is a one-man band here, so I've got to do everything. My son helps out when he can, but I've got, in other words, I'm it. So if anything's screwed up on the website, you know, let me know, will you? kw@armchairsurvivalist.com. I appreciate that. That way I can fix it. If you don't know it's broke, you can't fix it. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on, and this is pretty much what brought me back to doing the show. I've been on the show. I mean, let me rephrase that. I've been on the air for a little over 20 years, and I stopped the show a year ago in May because basically I said when I started the show, when I run out of things to say, I'm going to stop the show. Well, the engineer, after almost 10 years, had family stuff that he had to handle. He just couldn't handle. I mean, this guy works 7 days a week till like 2 in the morning. He runs Jeff Rentz, Steve Quayle, Alex Jones, Hodges. He runs all the big guys, and he just needed a break. So we agreed, and I said, you know what? Good time for me to leave. Well, I'm back, and I'll tell you why. The way the U.S. goes socially and politically is the way the rest of the world goes. And you can look around and you can see in the United States the concept of respect, civility, belief in the law, courtesy, and consideration, they've been wiped out. And the presidents that we've had since Reagan, this is not a lightweight thing. This is 100 years of conspiracy and planning. Each of the presidents have something to do, and every president we've had since Reagan has been establishment, every single one. In other words, these are the people that are pushing towards the one world government. Clinton, his job was to desensitize us to sexual perversion and to empower perverts, and he did. Bush's job was to desensitize us to authoritarian controls and to empower all forms of authority. I mean, face it, the Patriot Act, which nobody read, but yet they voted on it, took more rights away from the U.S. citizens than ever in the history of the United States. And then, of course, when the abomination came in, his job was to empower the racist blacks. I'm not saying all blacks are racist. I'm saying the racist blacks, the racist Mexicans and other minorities into actively attacking whites and Christians, and they do this physically on TV and radio, in the school system, and politically. This isn't me making this up. This isn't fake news. This is real. I have seen it, and so have you. So of course, now Trump, he's just screwed the whole thing up because the globalists, they got no idea what to do with him. So before he was even elected, they knew, the people in the background knew that he was going to get elected, and they started a campaign of propaganda against him. So we have in the United States, unfortunately, a good percentage of the population, and this percentage grows yearly, are fools. They're not educated enough to be able to evaluate similarities, differences, sanity, insanity, right from wrong. And this is because of the public school system. You got to understand, all public school systems are controlled by the Socialist Democrats and have been since the founding in the early 1900s. And that was the reason. And as socialism says, start off with the children, train them well, and they will become useless idiots as they grow older. Useless to socialism. A useful idiots, not useless. To me, they're useless, but to socialism, they're useful. And to Democrats, they're useful. What I've been seeing on a singular basis, never mind society at large now, I'm talking on a singular basis. I'm looking at a person, a male, a female, And yes, I'm sorry for the rest of you social justice warriors out there. There is only male and female, at least on Earth. Some place where you're from, they might have other, you know, 172 genders. Who knows? But I'm seeing incompetence. Now, what is incompetence? Okay, competence. What is competence? Let me rephrase that. What is competent? Per the definition, a competent person is having the requisite or adequate ability or qualities to perform a certain task. Competency is having the necessary ability and willingness to do something as good as it can be done. An incompetent person is somebody who does not have the ability, willingness, or mental or physical framework to achieve a certain task. An example would be, something as simple as a Whopper Flopper. An incompetent Whopper Flopper would be somebody who cooks the hamburgers barely enough to where they're burned on one side and raw on the other. Or a mechanic that's doing a brake job that doesn't put the springs back on the brake shoes, so they actually start flopping around and fall off within the first 100 miles. An incompetent typist is somebody who types a letter, misspells most of the words, doesn't understand grammar, and then wrinkles it and gets coffee stains on it before they give it to their boss. That's an incompetent person. So what am I seeing? On an individual basis, I'm seeing incompetence all over, everywhere I go. Now, I'm not saying everyone is incompetent. I'm seeing people who are competent like you wouldn't believe. I went into a Burger King to get a salad, and they had somebody who was a retarded man, probably about 21, 22, and he was cleaning. His job was janitor. That place was spick and span. It was perfect shape. You could eat off the floor. That's how clean this guy kept everything. And when you were done eating, if he didn't have anything else to do, he would come over to your table, smile, and offer to take your plate and get rid of it. And then he would wash your table down. And then when you got up, he'd wash where you sat down. And then he would dry it. You ever go into a restaurant and it's real busy, so the waitress says, okay, let me clear the table off for you. Clears the table off, takes a wet rag, and sweeps back and forth, knocking all the food and crap onto the cushions or onto the chairs and seat, and then walks off. Now, not only is your seat filthy, but the table is soaking wet, and she expects you to sit down. That's incompetence. I'm seeing that, and things like that. I'm going into, and I know you guys out there are gonna say, yep, that's happened to me, and I know you women are gonna say, that's sexist. So I go into an auto parts store, and there's a girl at the counter, and I say to myself, I'm saying, oh God, I need to talk to one of the guys because I know she's not going to know what the hell she's talking about. And I go up there and say, I need a water pump for a 1973 350. And she goes, what motor is that for? I said, it's for a 350. Well, what vehicle is it in? That doesn't matter. It's a 350. Well, let me look it up. And I said, well, it's just, you know, Chevrolet, GMC. I don't care. And I get so tired of this. So she's incompetent. Yet the two girls beside her know more about auto parts than I do. So it has nothing to do with gender. It has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the individual. And when the individual has had respect, civility, courtesy, consideration, and all the other plus points removed from their universe, then it's acceptable to be incompetent. And that's the other thing. Is the accepting of incompetence now is expected. Students, the majority of students graduating from high schools in the United States are incompetent. Yet, they're accepted. It's acceptable for them to be incompetent. It's astounding. So, I want my car washed. So, I take it to one of these car washers on the corner. You know, you have all these girls in a skimpy bikini saying, we'll wash your car for $5. You take it in there, and when they're done, you find streaks of dirt all over the place. They only halfway washed it. That's incompetence. Yet they expect to get paid. Or you hire somebody to put a roof on. And you believe me, up here in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, you're going to pay through the nose. Roofs, siding, garages, driveways, any service personnel, any service work like that, you're going to pay through the nose. Because this is retirement, you know, area. Not a lot of competition either. So I have a roof put on. I moved in my house, and there was a brand new roof put on. The first year it leaked. I called him up and said, the hell is this? Oh, yeah, we'll get out to it when it stops raining. I said, when it stops raining, I don't need it. I don't need you to come out and fix it. I need it fixed now. It's leaking. So they come out and they went up on a roof and they put some, some black snot on and it kind of sealed it. And they said, okay, it's fixed. The next year, guess what? It leaked again. 3 years in a row, it leaked. The third year, I had enough and I told them, we're going to court. I'm going to sue you. And there's no question I'm going to win. So they got all uppity about it, came out, and they spent 2 days fixing this roof that was supposed to have been done competently in the first place. So what I'm seeing is incompetence. An incompetent person will not survive. Now, my show is titled The Armchair Survivalist. So your first thought is, well, this guy didn't teach me how to crawl through the mud and live off of twigs and all of this stuff. Yeah, we'll get around to that. But I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to survive in that situation unless you can survive in your home life, unless you can survive in your normal life. And that's what I teach people to do. I teach you how to survive in your day-to-day existence. And I do that by impinging on your mind. I want you to think. Having knowledge is worthless unless you know how to use it and are willing to use it. So that's what I do, is to try and make you more competent. I'm not saying all of you are a bunch of incompetent buffoons. I'm saying in certain things, everyone's incompetent. In certain things, you can barely do something. Some people know how to change a tire, but they don't know how to use a lug wrench if the lug nuts are rusted. You know, it happens. So the more you can learn, the better you can survive. I've been in situations where I had to pull a gun, and I had to shoot before they shot. And I've seen people in these situations pull a gun, pull the trigger, and it jams. And they stand there with a stupid look on their face because they were not competently trained to unjam the gun. So that's just an example of how you're not going to survive if you're not competent. And that doesn't matter with what. There is a passage in one of my favorite books, Atlas Shrugged, where a woman pulls into a gas station in the middle of nowhere. And a man comes out and says, what would you like? And she told him, fill it up with gas. And this is in the old days when it was called a service station, meaning they would service your vehicle. He washed the windows to where they were squeaky clean. He lifted the hood. He checked the oil. He checked the transmission fluid. He checked the air pressure. He checked that car. And then when it was done, $2.85 for the gas. And she said, I've never seen anybody as competent as you are. And he thanked her. As she was leaving, she goes, wait a minute, aren't you... And I forgot the name of the guy. Aren't you the guy I've been looking for? Aren't you blankety blank? And he goes, yes. Well, what are you doing here? And he said, the best that I can. It doesn't matter what job you have, as long as you do it to the best of your ability. That's a competent person. And those are the people who survive. Those are the people who, if they lose their job, they're not out of a job long. Because competent people are wanted. Competent people are necessary. So that's what I hope I'm able to teach you, is how to be competent in certain ways. And it's just a matter of knowledge. Competency can be taught. Another example would be wood, okay? Let's say dining room table. The dining room table has scratches and gouges in it, and it's solid oak. And at one time it was gorgeous. But now, and you probably paid $600 for it. 10 years down the road, a lot of kids, a lot of Parcheesi games, poker games, what have you. And now the thing looks like crap. Too many people would say, I'll just donate it to the Goodwill or something. Me, I'll teach you how to raise all those dents, those scratches, how to refinish the top, and make it look brand new. And all of a sudden, you're not out $600. Now you have a table that not only will last you another 10 to 20 years, but now you have the technology to fix it yourself. You have become competent in that area. So that's why I'm here. That's what I'm doing. Now, last week I played a clip where the guy said, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Those of you who've listened to my show have listened to me many times tell you to get involved. Don't stand by and let crap happen. Don't stand back and allow destructive evil acts. And I want to tell you what happened today. Today, my store is in Hayden, Idaho. Today was Hayden Days. So they had the parades. They have a parade going through Hayden, and it's veterans of foreign wars, and it's all the banks have a little float, and they throw candy out, okay? So they throw candy out, right? And everybody sits at the curb and watches the people go by. And I got to say, the funny thing is, so the Republican Party has a float, and that's there. The Democrats don't dare come out anymore. The last time they came out, it was sexual perverts. There was four of them. A flaming homosexual. He was funny. He was all dressed in hand-knitted, and he knitted it himself, hand-knitted rainbow hat and shirt and mini shorts, and he was flapping his wrist back and forth. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts what he was making you think he was, whether he was or not. That's what he's making you think. And then some lesbians with the children they adopted, and that was a Democrat party for North Idaho. Well, they don't come out anymore because they got they came out of the closet too early, apparently, and Hayden won't even allow them to put a float in anymore. So we're standing there waving at everybody, and here is this woman that she's about 20 feet away, and she set up this chair on the sidewalk for her to sit in, and she had a boy and a girl that were probably a year and a half, 2 years old with her, a baby in her arms, and about an 8 to 10 year old blonde girl standing next to her. Now the woman in the chair was, she was Latino. She weighed a minimum of 400 pounds. So as the parade's going, the guys are throwing candy to everyone. And I look over there, and the little girl was running out into the street and bending over right in front of the wheel of a float to pick up a piece of candy. And that woman was calmly sitting there watching it. I yelled, everybody screamed, the driver stopped instantly and got out and got the baby and gave it back to the woman. And I'm saying to my son and wife, I said, that is ridiculous. She allowed that kid to go out there. And that was it. You know, we just didn't say anything else about it. Not more than 5 minutes later, the little boy sees candy out there and he goes running out. The same thing almost happens. And I went over there and said, what the hell are you doing? Are you allowing these children to go out there? She goes, why do I care? They're not mine. What? They're not my kids. I don't care. And I told her, I said, you are disgusting. Now, here's the thing about Hayden Days. The sheriff's department's down the street. So guess what's every other vehicle out there is a sheriff's car. So I went out to it. I told her, I said, you're going to tell me you don't care if these kids go out in the middle of the street? She goes, yeah, they're just getting candy. I said, they almost died. I don't care. They're not my kids. That's massive irresponsibility. I don't give a damn if they're not my kids. If they're my kids, not my kids, I don't care. A man is every child's father. That is an old Cherokee saying. And that means you're responsible for the lives of every child around you. She didn't care. They weren't her kids. So I told a deputy, and and my son got a picture of her, the plate in her car, so we're filing a criminal charge against her. They don't put up with that crap up here in Idaho. Oh, but of course, now I didn't say anything at all. I didn't mention to her that she was Latino, and I didn't mention to her that she was morbidly obese. But I'm sure that's the first thing that happens with these people is they pull out their race card and say, yeah, they were racist. My wife went over, chewed her out the second time. So anyway, this is it. You do not have the right to allow this kind of crap to happen, because what happens? What happens when you do? You ever have a bully in high school? He will continue bullying till somebody kicks his butt. And then he stops, magically. So they will do this. All of these type of people will pull these stunts, and as long as you let them get away with it, they will keep doing it. One of the things that we will never have up here until more Californians move in anyway, we don't have to worry about these so-called social justice warriors marching down the street, or Antifa causing riots, or any of that crap. This is Idaho. More people carry guns in this state than any state in the union. In fact, more people carry guns in this state than most states added together in the union. And they know it. We've had, Spokane is in Washington, which is only 30 miles west of here. We've had some of the lower forms of life crawl over here and try and rob people and beat people and start gang stuff up. They end up getting shot in self-defense. I don't care who or what you are. I don't care if you're a 13-year-old boy. You come up to me and you have a weapon and you start to attack me, you better be thinking of your next lifetime, because this one's done. And if I catch somebody trying to harm someone else, it's not going to be a very happy day for that person. We just simply don't allow it here. And that's the funny thing. You know, you get these people say, well, I'm going to dox you, which is a psychotic response that occurs to communists. I'm going to tell everybody where you live, or I'm going to tell everybody your phone number, or I'm going to tell everybody where you work, or I'm going to tell everybody. Do whatever you want, because that's something that, you do that because what? Because the person then is going to be afraid that somebody's going to come to their house. This is North Idaho. Come to my house. If you're found here at night, you'll still be here in the morning. Anyway, that's all for the ranting. Let's get into the show. All right, so as you know, I have different categories that I talk about. The economy, food and health, Islam, liberal psychosis, Trump. The new one is government threats. And that's if I have anything in there that's important enough to talk to you about. See, what I don't do in this show is talk to you about the same stuff everybody else is talking to you about, unless I have a different take on it, or unless I want to say something about it. So the next step here now is the economy. Trump has thrown a major wrench into the gears of this economy, meaning he's changed it to the point that the globalists don't quite understand what the hell he's doing. And it's not normal. None of the I've listened to so many shows. I get up sometimes 4 in the morning, and I listen to economic shows, and I listen to Heartbeat of the Nation shows, and farming shows, and they don't know what's going on. All they know is that the corporations are making money hand over fist. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's ever been in recorded history in the United States. There are more, and here's the, and this is the logic behind this, is that if people are buying stuff, and if the economy is doing good, then corporations and companies are going to be building stuff for us to buy, everything from toasters to condominiums to houses. Well, two things that are slowing down right now is automotive sales and recreational vehicle sales. And this is a warning, because this is the same type, not just these two, but also yachts. They're slowing down. I don't mean crashing. I mean slowing down. But they're in the same slowdown that they were prior, I would say around 2006. Maybe 2007. Like Nissan is laying off 12,000 people. They say it's only 9% of their whole workforce. But that's just one of the things. There's RV manufacturers laying off people. Sales of RVs are going down, which on one hand is good, because what they were doing, like up here, there's like 4 major RV dealers that have over $20 million of RVs, motorhomes and trailers, just floored. You know, they just in inventory. That's, anybody can buy an RV up here. I don't care how good your credit is, they'll finance you. Anybody buys an RV. And the bad thing is that within 6 months you're going to find that RV on Craigslist for sale, because they can no longer afford the payments. But that's neither here nor there, because it doesn't matter. But what's happening, and I'm just testing, this is a word of the wise, these companies are laying off people. These companies that have 50 to 100,000 people worldwide working for them are starting to pull in their horns, and they're starting to lay off some people. So just be aware. And remember what I've always said, your work, just because you work for somebody and have for 20 years, doesn't mean you have security. Because when they think that the economy is going to start heading south, you're gone. They're going to drop you. That's all for the economy. Now we're going into health and food. Most of you have been paying attention to the weather for the past 6 months. It's gotten hot where it's not supposed to. It's gotten cold where it's not supposed to, or it hasn't. Everything is screwed up. Up here, this is not normal, again, in Idaho, we would have 500 degree temperatures in a row, and then a cold front would come in, and we'd be down to 60 degrees with rain. Thunderstorms. Well, Europe is going through the same thing. Europe is smashing all heat records. All over Europe, all over the EU. But strangely enough, it's not the whole Europe. It's areas in there, like the Tour de France. It's a bicycle race. Well, they had to stop it because of snow in France. First time in history. So you have the socialists and communists yelling, climate change, climate temperature changing, you know, global warming and all of this crap. But it's the same thing, and it's the same thing that Earth has been doing for millions of years. And by the way, the temperatures that they come out and claim are records aren't. Especially in the United States. When they come out and claim, oh, this is the hottest Mississippi has ever been. Well, that's a lie. We had, and I saw just up here alone, up in northern Idaho, we had higher temperatures in the 1920s and 30s. In fact, that's where most of the records are, just prior to the Depression. So it's a cycle that goes up, it goes down, it goes sideways, but they never put two and two together. They never say, well, look, it's hotter in hell over here, but it's cold over here. That's weird. Isn't it weird? I wonder what's causing that. And of course, they'll never look at chemtrails or geoengineering. Or, you know, that's all for another show. All right, now, we're under health still. All of you know what Teflon is. Well, the problem with Teflon is that people don't know what Teflon is. And I've gone to many yard sales where you will see used non-stick pans, but the Teflon's mostly scraped off. So when you when you see a Teflon frying pan or pot, and you see the Teflon scratched off, do you know where that Teflon went? The Teflon that was scratched off went into your food. You ate it. You ate it. And then that Teflon gets into your system and it mimics hormones, causes problems. There were a federal toxicology report last year cited links between high levels of Teflon, if you want to use the term, because they have other different names for it, non-stick compounds, and blood and health problems. Well, that stuff doesn't go away just because you eat it. You pass it through your system. It goes into your poop and your pee, and it goes out into the sewage system. It goes out into the ocean, and guess what? Now they're finding half of the meat and fish tested were two or more times above the federal advisory level for fluoride, or fluoride, polyfluoride alkaloids, Teflons, PFAs. It's in their drinking water. It's in the fish. It's in everything. This is Teflon. It gets in everything. We don't use non-stick pans like that. Don't use anything that's coated. And these companies know that people like you and me are getting smarter. So we are not buying these kind of things. So now they're not calling it Teflon or PTFE or PFA or any of that stuff. They're just simply saying non-stick. It's non-stick stuff. It's non-stick. You have to actually go to their website to find out that it's Teflon. Years, 20 years ago, we threw away all of everything Teflon. We didn't, and I never used anything that was scratched in the first place. If I do use a Teflon pan, it's with wood or plastic spatulas. That's it, in any way, shape, or form. And the instant it has a scratch, it's garbage. The instant. It does not off-gas. Well, it can. Now, that's the other thing. If you take a Teflon pan, they will tell you that it's not supposed to be used above like 375 degrees. Because at 400 degrees, the Teflon actually off-gasses. So you're getting Teflon gas. You just, you know, all I use now is cast iron and iron pans. Not cast iron, but steel pans. That's it. Stainless steel once in a while, but everything I use is either cast iron or steel. That's it. All right, so what else? Now we don't have anything in Islam because the Muslims are doing just what they always do, lying and killing each other and us. So we'll go to the liberal psychosis, which is the largest category, unfortunately. I talked last week about how Target was the first company to do away with gender-specific restrooms, and now they have gender-neutral restrooms where anybody goes in, doesn't matter, male, female, switch hitter, on the fence, it doesn't matter. Well, there is a boycott against Target, and it is still going on. And in fact, you can go and sign the boycott if you wanted to. It would be at AFA.net, American Family. AFA.net. They have the boycott right at the first page. Every week there's a new story out where some transvestite, and by the way, the word transgender means transvestite. That's a man who sexually perverted enough that he pretends to be a woman. They go into these bathrooms and they take pictures of young girls because they're still homosexual. To take pictures of these young girls using the toilet. One of them came in the Target store here, and there was a woman who went in the bathroom with a 12-year-old girl to try on some clothes. And while she was in there, the girl yelled, and there was a guy sitting next to her in the next stall with his phone underneath taking pictures of her. Well, the woman ran out of the bathroom, yelled, and her husband and 2 6-foot-tall sons went in there and proceeded to beat the snot out of the person. And then left him in there and left Target. Well, for some strange reason, there were no witnesses and nobody knows who they were. But AFA.net, you can go there and you can sign the boycott. There's a lot of you out there who don't do anything with the internet. You might listen to my show once in a while. You might check your emails. That's it. But, and I hate to say this, but 50% of people on the internet really don't know what the hell they're doing. I recall somebody calling me on a phone and saying, where's your website? And I said, se1.us. So they're typing something and then they say, well, it doesn't come up. What do you mean come up? Go to se1.us. Well, I typed that in. Well, where did you type it? Google. What do you mean Google? Yes, I type it in Google and it tells me my choices. I said, okay. First off, stop using Google because it is an anti-American company, even though it's in Silicon Valley. There are other search engines that you can use. One of them is called startpage.com. It is the world's most private search engine. It searches all the other search engines. Startpage.com. Startpage, one word, .com. I said, you just go up to the top of the page and type in se1.us. And he goes, well, I've never done that. Okay. Anyway, Google, and I mentioned this Google thing because Google is wants to control everything that you see and hear. The age of internet censorship is 100% here. There's no question about it. And there's proof. Websites and people on YouTube are being banned because they talk about nutrition and natural food cures for diabetes, cancer, heart diseases. They're being banned. They're banned for criticizing sexual perversion and the way that the perverts are indoctrinating children, like in the, what do they call it, drag queen story hour that some of these perverted libraries are allowing. You're banned for criticizing any Democrat who isn't a white male. You can criticize white males, but if they are any other race, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to. You can get banned for pointing out climate change as a hoax. You can get banned for praising America and calling out for defense of America's borders. You get banned for citing known history. Like there were people banned for quoting Mahatma Gandhi and America's founding fathers. And banned for, people are being banned. I mean, this is YouTube, this is Twitter, this is Google. I mean, there's so many sites out there. This is backdoor communism. So anything that's against these kind of that's against socialism, communism, liberalism, perversion, anything against all of that, you can get banned for. This is quite real. This is not something that people can blow off now. Because, well, I have some clips from Tucker Carlson. This one I'm going to play, it's Tucker talking about a whistleblower who came forward from Google. And now I've listened to the whole recording of one of the heads of Google saying, yeah, we're not going to allow Trump to win again. We have to make sure it doesn't happen. So we're going to control what people see and hear on the internet.
In America, a tech story that might seem insignificant but is not. In fact, it may determine what happens in the next presidential election, very well may. A Google whistleblower has come forward to describe his company's plans to remake the American political landscape. Google, of course, is the most powerful company in the world. So when an anonymous whistleblower comes forward, in this case telling Project Veritas that Google is using internal algorithms to shape what Americans see online, and by extension what they think, you better take it seriously.
Fairness is a dog whistle. It does not mean what you think that it means, and you have to apply double think in order to understand what they're really saying. And what they're really saying about fairness is that they have to manipulate their search results so that it gives them their political agenda that they want. And so they have to rebias their algorithms so that they can get their agenda across.
That's the definition of propaganda, again, being perpetuated by the single most powerful company in the history of the world. This is not surprising to viewers of this show. James Dorn was fired for Google for his political views, his totally conventional, moderate political views. And they came on this show to describe the culture at Google.
There are definitely some political biases within Google that I was trying to shed light on in the document, and that they affect many parts of the business. And for example, who they do business with and what type of content they create. And I really think that those political biases need to be addressed.
It's not just whistleblowers. Hidden camera footage obtained by Project Veritas shows a conversation with a woman called Jen Janai. Her Google title is Head of Responsive Innovations, Responsible Innovations in the Global Affairs Department. In that video, Janai says that Google is works to make certain that Donald Trump does not win another election. Quote, we're also training our algorithms, like if 2016 happened again, would the outcome be different? People were not putting that line in the sand, that they were not saying that what's fair and what's equitable. So we're like, well, we're a big company. We're going to say it. In other words, we're going to try and affect the outcome of the 2020 presidential campaign. Janai goes on to blast Elizabeth Warren's proposal to break Google up into two companies. Why? Check out this reasoning. Quote, all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that. So using a company's dominance on the internet to sway the outcome of an election, that's their plan. There should be a term for what Janai is describing. Turns out there is a term. It's a term you've heard constantly from talking heads on television for more than 2 years. It's called hacking an election. Google wants to hack our election. They're saying that out loud. As we've been told over and over again by CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and all the other propagandists, hacking an election is very bad. At minimum, it warrants a multi-year investigation by law enforcement agency. And yet, it's happening now. The Washington establishment has said they want to prevent election interference. But of course, that's a lie. They just want to make sure they control the elections. That's their only goal. That's why they're not attacking the real source of election interference, which is Silicon Valley. Google, Facebook, and their ilk have far more political power than Russia ever has or ever will have. But the people in charge of our country don't care about any of that, because when Google meddles in an election, Democrats benefit. By the way, if you want to find that video, you can't access it on YouTube. Google took it down. That's not surprising. You can already be tossed off of YouTube and Facebook if you decide they're using speech you don't like. They'll accuse you of hate speech, whatever that means. Now they can toss you off their sites just for putting up videos that make you look bad. Meanwhile, this week, Ravelry, a knitting social networking website with 8 million members, banned all explicit support for Donald Trump, and only for Donald Trump. And they got away with it. And because they have gotten away with it, other platforms almost certainly will do the same thing. All of this is going on fragrantly in public, but most Republicans haven't even responded to it. They haven't reacted at all. As soon as the 2016 election was over, the press and big tech openly began plotting on how to control the narrative in 2020, which is another way of saying control the election outcome in 2020, and using the scapegoat of fake news as an excuse to control the public discourse. Republicans were in charge of Congress at the time. They did nothing. The White House commands a vast regulatory apparatus. They've sat motionless and done nothing. The only Republican who seems even interested at all in the subject and keeping big tech in check at all is new Senator Josh Hawley. He just introduced a bill that would force tech companies to act as genuinely open platforms in order to receive valuable regulatory benefits. That's the deal. They're violating the deal. Nobody else seems to care. Passing Hawley's bill does not seem to be a conservative priority, though. No one in Congress is talking about it. That's a big mistake. Successful political parties look out for their supporters and for the public at large and protect them from harm. Republicans, meanwhile, are sitting in a stupefied fog of libertarianism, doing nothing while their ideas are suppressed and their supporters are silenced. One day they'll look up and find they have no supporters at all. Who will be to blame for that? Only themselves.
So the guy that was the strange voice in the background, well, they discovered who he was and they fired him. Google fired him. And he has a lot more information out there on what Google is doing. And Google owns, it is the largest company in the world. That's it. They are going to be guiding everybody. This is collusion. This is the real collusion. You know something I learned as a child? When you get somebody saying, you're a liar, you're a liar, you're a liar, they're usually the liars. Or somebody saying, you stole something from me. Well, they usually are the ones that have been stealing things. And we have these communists in the Congress yelling that Trump has been colluding. Guess what? All the Democrats are in collusion with the enemies of America, and Google is one of them. In fact, the guy came out that did that recording, and he's got some posts that he puts out, and he has to make it small because he's being found out, and they're deleting everything. So he came out and medium.com. His name is Greg Coppola, Coppola. And he says that he was fired from his job at Google for saying that he believes news and search results have a political bias. So he's using data, not evaluation, not human emotion and reaction. So what he's saying, what he's doing, and he explains this thing called the power law distribution. And what this is that Google is putting certain websites higher than others. Let's say, here, let's give an idea. Let's say you search for the word Donald Trump. Search for Donald Trump. Guess what's going to come up number one? CNN. Then USA Today. Then the New York Times, Politico, The Guardian, The Atlantic, The New Yorker, Deadline, Huffington Post, CNBC. These are all communist networks. Nowhere on this list is there Fox News. This is how it works. They make sure that the websites that they want you to see when you search a name or a word or a subject, these are the websites they want you to see. So that's why you don't use Google. You use something else. I've done research for not too many years ago, maybe about 10 years ago. I did a research for long-term storage foods. When I checked Google, our company was on page like 9 or 10. When I used Start Page, I was on the first page. Now, why was I all the way in the back? Well, because I'm associated with my company. And I'm an evil, nasty, right-wing, homophobic, woman-hating, child-stomping hillbilly. And Google don't like that. In fact, Google doesn't like much of anything that has to do with America or Christians. And as a matter of fact, a veterans group had their ad pulled from YouTube. You know, when you go on YouTube and you're watching something and there's a little banner comes up, it's some ad for who knows what the hell it's for. Well, they had the word Christian in it. And so that's offensive to Google, so Google pulled it. It's an unacceptable keyword, Christian. But when you have, see, we have what's now known as the four women of the apocalypse. These are racist Muslim black women that are congresswomen. I know you've heard of them. They are disgusting loudmouth creatures. They have the accumulated IQ of a rutabaga. I've heard them talk, every one of them. And it is, to me, astounding that they even exist, much less in Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley. These are disgusting creatures. They hate white. You can see, and look, if you do your research on each one of these, you will find where they hate white people. They hate anything Jewish. They hate America. Literally hate America. But anything they say is totally okay on Google. In fact, one of them is a Palestinian. Now, explain that to me. See, this is what gets me. What's worse? This a Muslim like this getting elected into one of the highest positions in the United States, or the low-life gutter trash that voted her in? She is a pure communist. And this is Representative Tlaib. Tlaib? Whatever. She's a loudmouth. She's profane. She's criminal in her words. And there are investigations already into her because of the kind of person she is and what's been found out about her. But she hates whites. And she hates America. And she hates corporations. And she hates the Founding Fathers. And she has this great idea of what to do with when her and the rest of the communists cancel this tax break that Trump did. So this little spot, listen to this.
So recently I introduced the Boost Act. This legislation completely repeals the GOP tax scam that is only helping wealthy individuals, the rich, the corporations. And do you know what I did with that money? We're going to go ahead and put it into the pockets of folks like everyday Americans. If you make less than $100,000, you're going to get up to $6,000 in your pocket. And if you make less than $50,000, you're going to get $3,000. That's what we do with our public dollars. We give it back to the people that earned it.
Oh, and I'll get into this part later, another show. The only difference between socialism and communism is four or five ticks on the volume knob, that's all. So, Ilhan Omar, and that's not a real name, by the way. And she's a, of course, Democrat from Minnesota, which is no longer part of America. It's a subsidiary of Somalia. She's being investigated by the Ethics Committee in the House for immigration fraud, perjury, and bigamy. Because apparently she was married to her husband and her brother at the same time. So we'll get into that later. Robert Mueller had his testimony before Congress and the communists on the Congress, in the Congress this week. I watched the whole thing, and it was embarrassing.
I was embarrassed for him and disgusted by the antics of these communists like Jerry Nadler.
They knew, they were asking him questions, and they all knew what the questions were, and they all knew that everybody had read the questions. So all they were doing were asking him the same questions, and they were reading him the questions and then reading his answers. Now, that's stupid unto itself, but here's the thing that came out of this. He's an old man. He doesn't know what he's doing. He did none of this research in any way, shape, or form. He did none of it. Mueller was nothing but a figurehead. He did not know of any of the names. He didn't know what was going on. All he knew was what his staff wrote up. And what was his staff? His staff were Trump-hating, Republican-hating, Democrat lawyers. The whole crew of this special counsel were Democrats. He didn't read, nor did he he didn't write, nor did he read his own report before he signed it. He made himself look like an idiot. Almost every question that he was asked, he said, what page is that on? Is that in the report? And then when he was totally confused, he said, and they was asked something, he said, well, my report stays, I refer you back to my report. That'll answer it. This guy knew nothing. He made himself look like a doddering old fool who was used by some con men to steal money from children. He is, and for someone like him to allow this to occur, this is another level of disgust. And that is not stopping the communists in Congress. These pieces of lukewarm dog excrement are going right ahead And everything has been, and Trump said this. This is the witch hunt. This has been from day one. And when I say day one, I mean from the moment he put his hand on the Bible and said, I will. They were looking for ways to destroy him and invalidate the presidency. And they're still doing it. They're going out. They're going to file impeachment papers again. Impeachment has already been filed by one of the racists black racists in the Congress, Al Green. He is a avid racist, and he hates, well, Republicans. It doesn't matter who, what Republican would have won. He filed impeachment proceedings, what, seven times now, and every time it's blown out because like thrown down. No, who cares? What are you talking about? They have nothing. They have nothing on Trump. They're just going for a fishing expedition further. They're going to continue it until he's out of office or doesn't get elected. Google's going to help them. That's what they do. Oh, and in an unrelated report, it seems California is being overrun by rats. And I don't mean politicians. I mean, this has come out in many of the newspapers. It's a plague of rats. Now, let me tell you about the last plague of rats that hit California. The bubonic plague is carried on the fleas that live on rats, not the rats themselves. Now, these rats, surprisingly enough, are also they are also overrunning a few other places. New York City, Minnesota, wherever there is a high level of immigrants, that's where the rats are. And I don't understand why people can't put two and two together. California, and unfortunately, there's a lot of cool people and nice people living in California, but the majority of them are morons. Personally, I think anyone living in California is a moron for not getting out, because you will end up losing everything you own sooner or later. The main cities, you know, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, they have so many criminal aliens in there, and these aliens do not have hygiene. You want to know why there's recalls? I look at the FDA recall list, and I get it on a daily basis. And unless it's really bad, I don't even report on it anymore. And I'll tell you why. It's because every single recall is being traced back to the food being handled by illegal aliens. No question. This is it. And the big thing that came out this past week was, you know, you go to a store, like you go to Costco, and you're looking at lettuce. And it says pre-washed, no need to wash. Do you know what? You know how they do that? See, I lived in Sacramento, and I lived in Modesto. And this is where all of this stuff comes through for processing. Let's say tomatoes. So you don't need to wash these tomatoes. They're clean. So the trucks come in from the fields. And they have this 5,000-gallon vat of water that has bleach added to it. And they drop the tomatoes in there. And the tomatoes are pulled out and put on a conveyor belt by human hands. And then the tomatoes go into the plant to be processed. And this container of bleach will sit there for a week. But that's all California requires for them to claim pre-washed. So now the Centers for the Disease Control is coming out and saying, whether it says pre-washed or not, you have to wash your vegetables, because there are too many diseases on them. Everything that's handled by illegal aliens, everything, can have a disease on it. Salmonella, listeria, and most of those come from human feces. They go to the bathroom, and then they leave. They don't want to wash their hands. They might wipe their hands on their pants, and that's as far as it goes. And again, that's not all of them, but it's enough that it's killing people, and it has been for 20 years. It's just astounding that nobody wants to put two and two together. Nobody wants to, because they're afraid of being called racist. And as long as you allow the bully to get away with it, they will. As long as you allow them to call you racist, they will. See, I was interviewed by, this was the Sacramento Bee. This is 20 years ago. This is more. This is 25 years ago. And I was the head of the San Angeles County Militia. We had thousands of members. And the reporter was a female. And the cameraman was a male, and it was going to be a video clip for the KCBS. Before we did this interview, I set her down in my office, and I said, Miss, I want you to understand something. I take everything personal. And then I smiled at her, and I could see the hairs on the back of her neck go up, and The cameraman just kind of smiled. And I do. If you're going to fault me, you do it to my face. If you're going to insult me, you do it to my face. If you're going to correct me, you do it to my face. And it doesn't mean I don't take corrections. I do. Ask my wife. The problem is people aren't taking things personally on our side of the aisle. We're trying to be tolerant and prove that we're tolerant and prove that we are nice people. I'm not proving anything anymore. I'm proving the fact that you cannot step on my toes and not expect me to yell. All right, the last segment that I got here is Trump. The only thing that, there's a lot of stuff going on with the president, but let's just say he is calling out these people for what they are. He's calling them out when they do their stuff, and he's getting pretty damn tired of it. There is a congressman. He's on the oversight committee. He is a black racist. He hates all Republicans. He hates whites. He's a disgusting person, and he always has been. And that's what keeps voting him in. His district is 55% black and 35% white. And it is one of the most grossest areas in the United States. I'm trying to pull this up on my webs on the internet, and I'm being messed with right and left. This is astounding. See, this is what the internet's doing. Whenever there's, and the title of this, and this is on the Hill, Trump slams Cummings as a brutal bully. He's in Baltimore, and he has a district in Baltimore. And what it is, there's so much crime there. There's rapes, there's robberies, there's murders. And guess who keeps electing this garbage back into Congress? Rapists, robbers, murderers. And Trump's, Cummings is screaming for impeachment like every other racist in Congress is, and communists is screaming like crazy. They want Trump out. They don't want him in there. They just anyone but Trump, and which is a lie, because they wanted Hillary, and they didn't want anyone else but Hillary. And when that failed, my God, they just started going like fleas out of a dog you're washing. They're coming off like crazy and yelling and screaming. And Trump slams this guy saying, look, you're telling me how bad it is at the border. Why don't you turn around and take a look at your district? Anyway. All right. So, all right. Let's see. There's a couple more things here. What we're going to do now. This is yard sale season. Now, my show is always, half of it is going to be news articles and me talking about certain things and giving you ideas on things that can help you. And then the second part is going to be more things that can actually help you, either help you make money, help you get what you want, teach you how to fix something, how to, you know, stuff like that. And one of them is yard sales. If you're like me, you got a lot of crap you've been collecting over the years, and you don't need it anymore, or you don't want it, or you've got new crap and you want to get rid of your old crap. Well, if you came into my store in Hayden, half of my store is yard sale stuff. We had a yard sale. We're downsizing our house. We're getting rid of all the stuff that I collected over the years. You know, we go to sales, my wife and I, and even my son. We go to yard sales, or we get closeouts, or, oh, this would be great gifts for Steve, or Paula would love this. And we buy them, whatever the hell it is. It could be clothes, it could be pots and pans, it could be sheets, it could be whatever. And then I stick them under the bed or something and literally forget about them for 2 or 3 years. So we got all of those sitting here for sale. We've got so much stuff we can have, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're just barely cleaning the house out. But, you know, this stuff, and you've heard the saying, one man's garbage is another man's gold. Well, that's true. I've gone to yard sales, and this is when I was a master gunsmith for 25 years, and I was working on a fully automatic MAC-10. And there was a specialized pin in the front of it to hold it together. And I couldn't find it anywhere, because these are out of production. So I'm trying to figure out how we can make one. The guy wanted everything original as possible. And I even went to gunpartscorp.com. They didn't have any. I'm at a yard sale, and this guy is a gun guy, and he's got a box the size of a lunchbox full of oddball pins and clips and pieces of metal that he's collected over the years by working on guns himself in his garage. And lo and behold, there's one of those pins. 25 cents. Yeah, see? So you never know what you're going to find. We find stuff all the time. My wife tells me, we need some more legal size envelopes. Guess what? I go to a yard sale yesterday. Lady has a box of 100. She goes, oh, here are free. So you don't know. One person, they just want to get rid of everything. They just want to get rid of everything. They don't care. They don't care the prices. They just want to get rid of everything. And another person knows what some of their stuff is worth. So they're not asking, you know, if it got a bicycle that's worth $150, they're asking $75. And sometimes you can dicker with them, talk it down. And that's the rule of thumb. You don't go to a yard sale or a tag sale or a rummage sale or garage sale or whatever words you use in your part of the world. You don't go to one and pay what they're asking unless you really need that thing. You always try and bargain with them, always. In some parts of the world, it's an insult not to. And, you know, it's fully expected. So the problem with yard sales, now there's two parts to it. One part is you going to one, and the other part is you having one. So we'll cover the going to one. You go to a yard sale. You've got to be careful what you're looking at. Make sure if you're blind like me that you bring a pair of glasses so you can read the fine print if you're looking at something. If you're going to spend, you know, a quarter, a buck, $2, $5, big deal. I buy DVD players all the time for $2, $3. And if I can clean them up and they work, fine. I sell them in the store for $5 to $10, just so, because I get people here who really don't have a lot of money, and I mean this, and that's a problem. And I don't know about where you are, but where we are in Idaho, our Rhino governor brought Common Core to the schools in Idaho, all the schools in Idaho. So you have people who graduate who can't read or write, they don't understand arithmetic. And they're thrown out into the real world where they got to get jobs. So they end up getting minimum wage jobs. So they don't have a lot of money to spend. They can't spend $59.95 on a DVD player. But they can spend $5 to $10. You know, they can't spend $300 on a 32-inch flat screen TV. But they can spend $50. So this is what we do here. We find some things at yard sales that people just don't flat want, and I'll pick them up, and I'll clean them up, and if I can fix them, fine. If I can't, hey, I'm only out a couple bucks, I'll throw them away. And that's the thing. Now, you might be a watch collector. You might work on watches. You might work on DVDs. You might work on small two-stroke motors. You know, you might work on bicycles. People decide that something they own isn't worth anything, and they put it out on the curb and say free, or they sell it at a yard sale, tag sale, garage sale, flea market, whatever. So you go there and you look at the thing and you determine the value and how much you want to spend. Yes, you can listen to the people explain it to you. I don't want to say they're all lying, but like I learned as a kid, I knew John Wayne when I was a kid, and he taught me something. He said, trust everyone, but brand your cattle. So the same thing, trust the people, but just verify yourself. So you look at whatever oddball stuff they're selling, and you determine whether or not you want it, or, you know, you go to determine your priorities, determine whether or not you need that crap, or are you going to use it someday, you know, the famous thing for us preppers. Someday. I went to a yard sale, and for $10, I bought 6 complete brand new doorbell sets. That's with the ding-donger that goes inside your house. That's the electronics that hooks up to the power. That's the doorbell button. $10, right? Damn doorbell costs about $3. The button that goes on the outside of the house. And my house, that plastic doorbell button rots out every 2-3 years from the sun. So for $10, I got it all. And if you buy one of these kits, one of these full kits at Home Depot, you're looking at about $40-$50. So my wife goes, what the hell are you doing with that? Well, so far, I've used all five of the doorbell buttons. I'm on the fifth one right now. And our doorbell went out, and I replaced it with all the equipment that I bought. So I'm way ahead. You might not have the places to store that kind of stuff. So, you know, I buy things that I know are going to go bad, and I can use them at a later date. Like I bought a pair of shoestrings. Big deal, you say. Well, I use San Antonio shoes. This is what I wear, SAS. Very comfortable. Expensive, but very comfortable. And they have special shoestrings that'll last a long time. You can buy cheap shoestrings over at Walmart, a buck something a pair. But the SAS shoestrings are made to last a long time. They care about it. Lady had a pair, she goes, and you look in the yard sale stuff. And whenever you go to a yard sale, a garage sale, usually you'll find a box on the curb that says free. Guess what? Here's a brand new pair of SAS shoestrings in there for free. You bet I snagged them. So you look at the products, you look at them, and you test them. And if it's it's a fan, it's electrical, you ask if you could plug it in. And the whole thing here is you have to evaluate your need, your want, and whether or not it's worth the money, and if it even functions, and if it doesn't function, can you fix it type thing. So you've got to do all the evaluations on your own. And then you figure out, you know, what you want. Try and take $5 bills, $10 bills, some 20s, a handful of ones, and a pocket full of quarters. It's very rude to walk up and see something for a buck and ask the lady if you got change for a 20 or even a 100. I've had some con artists come up and play that game. I get something for a dollar, they go, you got change for a 100? No, I don't. Go away. So show some courtesy. To bring small bills and a pocket full of change. And make sure you have in your vehicle, make sure you got a tub or a box or something you can put all the small things in. You don't want the stuff bouncing all over the car. And be courteous. Be respectful. This is some person's stuff that you're looking at. Don't pick stuff up and throw it on the ground, kick things, and if you break it, you know the saying, you just bought it. So man up, and if you break something, then you just pay for it. You don't even question it. Well, they might. I saw a woman break a piece of pottery. She had a $10 price tag on it. And this woman, and this is a stupid thing to do. You know how most of you women don't carry purses, you carry luggage? She had this big purse that was probably about 2 feet by a foot and a half over her shoulder, and it was sticking out behind her a good foot. She turns around, hits this little vase, knocks it on the ground, shatters into 1,000 pieces. That's $10. So she apologized and offered to clean it up, and she goes, I'll buy it, whatever it was, I don't even know. And the person hosting the sale said, you can have it for $2. I'll just take $2, that's all. So just remember the courtesy, remember the respect. Do not insult somebody just because they say no. It's their right to say no. We go to yard sales up here. See, this is a different area. This is different up here. We got a lot of tourists. We got a lot of people from California. And we have a lot of what they call snowbirds. You know, they live in Arizona. They come up here for the summer. Because, see, 90 degrees up here is a hell of a lot better than 120 in Phoenix. Go figure. A lot of golf courses and all of that up here. But you get people up here having yard sales. They move up here. And they still think that they're in San Francisco or Los Angeles. And they will put things out at high retail. I know what that's worth. I know that cell phone is worth $189. And I only use it a year. Yeah, well, honey, up here, they give them to you free if you sign a year contract. I'm sorry. You're not going to, you know, put it on eBay. Get your $25 out of it, and that's it. So, of course, you get some people, and don't waste their time telling them that they're overpriced, because they know it. You know, sometimes I get out at we go to yard sales every Friday. I get out of the car, I walk up. The very first thing I look at is like a snow shovel, brand new, is $12, and the person has $15 on it and it's used. I just turn around, and get back in the car. Because it's like, why would I waste my time? So that's the thing. But the thing is, be courteous. Now, do not go to yard sales driving a one-ton crew cab dually pickup towing a trailer. Now, why would I say that? What do you think? There's some inconsiderate buffoons up here that do that. Just be courteous. Do not park in the street. You know, park like normal. We have people who stop in the middle of the street. They stop in the middle of the street, leave their vehicle running, get out, and go into the yard sale. Well, knowing me, I'm going to have a word to say about that. And I've ordered people to get in their cars and get the hell out of the way. I'm not nice about it. Be courteous always. Be respectful always. If you can't park safely, don't park. We have people that will simply, they will nose in and leave the butt of their vehicle sitting out in the street. Just be respectful. That's all I ask, and that's all everybody wants. There's probably more to it, but every area is different. It's like Christmas. You have no idea what you're going to get. You have no idea what you're going to find. And I mean that literally. I love artwork, and I bought a picture. It's in a frame by 12 by 16. It's a lithograph of a drawing of Maine, and it's number 250 of 500, and I paid $5 for it. The frame is worth more than that. It's a beautiful little oak frame. So I get it back here, and I have an art dealer come in and look at it, and she goes, it's about $150. She said I would pay about $95, $90 for it. So you don't know what you're going to get. But then again, you might know. There are a lot of people from Seattle that come here who are art collectors, who are collectors, period. They have antique stores, and they buy stuff. They don't even question it. They'll buy everything. And if I had the room, I'd buy a lot more than I am. But so that's the thing. And if you're looking at the ads, and you're looking in the newspaper or one of the throwaways, like the Penny Saver or the Nicholsworth or something like that, and it says yard sale 9 to 8 or 9 to 5. Don't show up at 8 o'clock. You don't know what's going to happen, but most of the time they're going to tell you to get the hell out of there. I say my yard sales start at like 8:30. And you get the professionals. These are the guys that do this for a living. They buy products. They buy stuff at yard sales cheap. They'll Jew you down like crazy. And then they'll have a yard sale, or they have a store, and they mark it up high as possible. I got no problem with them pricing stuff like that. I got no problem with that. That's called merchants. You know, that's what merchants do. But they want to beat everybody. I've had people show up at 7:30, and we're just finishing our donuts. That's tradition. Yard sale, we got donuts. And I tell them we're not open yet. Well, can I look around? No, you can't. Come back when it's you know we're having a yard sale because you looked in the paper. Then you know it opens at 8:30. I'm not coming back. I don't give a damn. Get out of here. You know when somebody commits something so flagrant and rude, I'm not going to patty cake with them. I'm not going to be tolerant. I want them to know that they screwed up. So anyway, that's basically going to a yard sale. Now, what about you're going to have them? How to have a successful yard sale. First off, don't take cardboard and put thick cardboard over a couple sawhorses and then place your stuff on that. That's kind of stupid. Get tables, okay, or something sturdy to put your items on. Be careful. Remember Murphy's Law. If it can fall, it's going to. So don't pile all the glassware right at the edge of the table where somebody with a big purse can come by and knock it down. Don't put stuff out that if it falls down, it'll break in the wind. Take a look at what the weather's going to be like that day. We had gusty winds here in Coeur d'Alene up to 35 miles an hour on a Saturday. And these people, there were certain people that had some beautiful, I went to one place, had beautiful artwork, framed pictures. And they had set them out at 8 in the morning in the front yard, leaning against some cardboard boxes. And then the wind kicked up. Half of them went down to the next door in his lawn, and the glass broke in the front. You just throw away your artwork at that point if it gets all torn up. And that's another thing. If you're going to sell pictures or paintings, do not put them in the sun. They will fade. And if you've got a $50 picture that you think is worth, you paid $250 for it, you think you can get $50 for it, you put it out in the sun for an hour, it's worth half of what you think it's worth now. Because it will fade out so fast, it's ridiculous. Anything that's colorful, artwork, even tapestries, don't put it out in the sun. Put it in the garage or someplace where it's safe. And speaking of garage, look at your driveway and your garage. You got grease and oil piles there. Clean it up. Get some kitty litter, let it soak up, and then sweep that up, and then take some Tide and some water, sprinkle it around, grease it up, stiff brush, clean it up, rinse it off, and then dry it. Don't have people walking getting grease all on their shoes, and it looks really trashy, and it's really inconsiderate. But get these folding tables. Get some folding tables if you have some. If you don't, you can make things that are solid enough to use, or you can literally lay tarps down and put stuff on it. I've gone to yard sales where people have thrown clothes for sale on a dirty driveway. I don't understand. I just don't get it. On a greasy, dirty driveway. Get some tarps. Harbor Freight. $5 to $10. You can get some tarps. Throw them down. If you got nice clothes, hang them up. Again, be careful where you set your stuff, because stuff could fall. Don't do anything as dumb as say, oh, I have all these rings I want to sell. Let me put them right out where people can see them. No, they're going to disappear that way. And there's a lot of criminals out there. You'll have four or five people come to a yard sale that somebody has already scoped out. And two or three of them will take your attention off to the side, talking about some nonsensical stuff that you have for sale, while the other two are pocketing some of the more valuable stuff. Never leave your yard sale alone. And it's always smartest to have a minimum of two people totally working it. In case you've got to go to the bathroom, one can go in, the other can watch it. I'm not saying everybody's a crook, but I'm saying there's enough of them out there, and they go to yard sales for this specific reason. They look for people who have a cash box, and they wait for them to turn around, and they'll snag that box. Don't keep all your change on you. Keep the majority, you know, a good amount on you. If you're going to use an apron or if you're just going to stick it in your pocket, that's fine. And then keep your cash box or Tupperware container or whatever you're going to use to keep your money, and keep that out of sight, back further in the garage. So it's just using common sense, setting up the how you're going to sell. Now, realize this. People like mysteries. So if you have boxes of crap, of all kinds of weird stuff, sometimes not even setting them out is better, because people will dig through this stuff. And they'll line up to dig through this stuff. Now, my viewpoint is the most important thing is how you advertise. First off, you can put your ad for free. I don't care where you are in the United States, there's Craigslist. Go on Craigslist, craigslist.com, and on the right-hand side, find out where your city is, your state, your city, or the closest city to where you are. And then you just make an account, and they don't care who you are, just make an account, and you can advertise your yard sale there for free. And many people read Craigslist, probably 20% of the population. You can also put it in the throwaway, supermarket throwaway papers. Like here it's called the Nicholsworth. In Los Angeles it was the Penny Saver. It's a penny pincher. Or it's, you know, all of these papers, these are the ones that you go to the supermarket on the way out, you see 500 of them piled on a rack. You can put your ad there. You put the date you're having it, the times you're having it, and then list some of the cooler stuff. And if you have some very expensive things like stamp collection, coin collection, car for sale, you can put your phone number in there also. Okay, that's some of the way. Now, normal newspapers, and this is true, normal newspapers are dying. People just flat aren't reading them, and they're not using them. If you want to spend the money and put an ad in your local newspaper, go right ahead. You might catch one or two people. Most people don't even waste their time looking at them anymore. The important thing are the signs. This is where most people screw up. We have seen people use colored paper. Just 8x10, 8x12 piece of paper. And draw their, write their sign, you know, yard sale, and then the address, and then the arrow, and then staple it on a tree. And the instant the sun hits it, the paper just folds in. Or the wind hits it, paper tears and rips and flies off. I don't understand. What's wrong? Common sense is not common anymore. You want to make a sign that people can see, and that is simple. My signs are simple. Say yard sale, and then an arrow. That's the important part, is the arrow. If you just said sale and an arrow, that's all you had to do. The arrogance of the millennials up here. We went to there's this big, I mean, this thing's like 3-foot by 4-foot yard sale sign on the street. And it says, yard sale, all of this stuff, and then it gives an address. And it has one arrow to the right. Cool. So I think, at least they're smart enough, they got an arrow. Don't load up your sign with everything you're selling. Nobody cares. All they care about is yard sale, what direction. You could always put the date, like 6/28, 6/29, or something like that. So we turn right, and we're going down the street, and there's no other signs. And up here, you'll go a mile, 2 miles. No, no sign. Turn around, come back, no sign. Nothing off the main, off that street. And my son looks at the address up on his cell phone, and he goes, it's 4 blocks to the right, 2 blocks to the left. So we go there, and I walk up, and I say, you have only one sign out. She goes, oh, that's all anybody needs. Everybody looks up the address on their cell phone. I go, what? Everybody looks up the address on their cell phone. So people, while they're driving, they see that ad, they see the address, and they start texting and looking, or doing, you know, with their cell phone with one hand while they're driving, looking up the address. She goes, oh, yeah. I didn't say anything else. I just left. Arrogance plus ignorance equals stupidity. So you make your signs, and there's different ways. My signs are made on cardboard. Now, actually, what I do is I have colored paper, like bright orange or fluorescent pink, and I print black thick letters. Says yard sale, arrow to the right, arrow to the left. Then I laminate it. So it's waterproof. And it's fairly sturdy, but then I tape it onto a piece of cardboard. And then that's my sign. It is solid. In fact, I could probably knock someone out with one of those signs. And then you take that sign, and you figure out how many signs you're going to need. How many signs am I going to need that with the arrow pointing to the right? How many signs with the arrow pointing to the left? And you make as what you think you're going to need. Now, how are you going to put the signs up? Do you have wooden telephone poles to put them on? Do you have steel? Do you have concrete? Do you have trees? Most poles where people would put signs that are wooden, they have nails in them already. And you could take a hammer with you and pull out the used nails and use them again. Sometimes it's concrete pole or it's a steel pole. Well, I'll also take duct tape or the steel clothes hangers. If you have any, they're so rare now. I hate to have to tear them apart. Or you can get baling wire and use that. And you just figure out you poke a hole on both sides of the sign, put a little piece of wire through one side, curl it over so it's tight, wrap the baling wire around the pole, and then put a little piece through the other hole and pull it tight, and cut off the excess. So you figure out how it's going to mount and how many signs you're going to need. Make sure the signs are real, though. Make sure these signs people can read. One of the problems that people have when they make signs is they put so much on there. I've seen people draw maps on these signs. Now, how the hell are you supposed to read a sign like that when you're going 40 miles an hour or more? So again, follow the KISS formula. Keep it simple, stupid. Yard sale and an arrow. And don't draw an outline. Just an outline. This is things that people do. Take a white piece of paper, poster board or something, and using a pen, draw the outline of a letter. See, outlines are fine as long as you fill it in with black or red or what have you. So make sure your letters are bold enough that people can read them at a distance and the arrows can be seen. Don't get into the artistic garbage. Again, follow the KISS formula. And if you make your signs like I do, 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper, different colors, you know, I use bright yellow, bright orange, bright pink, and then I put thick black letters on there, yard sale, and an arrow to the right or to the left. That's it. That's all I do. And then I put the signs up. I use them for many years. And that's another thing. When you're done with your sale, take your signs down. Some cities, it's actually illegal to put signs up, but they ignored that. Most of the time, they ignore them. But they don't ignore it if it's still up the next week. In Sacramento, it was a $50 fine if your sign was up more than 3 days. And they made over $2,000 a year fining people. So be courteous, again, and respectful, and considerate. Take your signs down. You know, I got to tell you, I lived in Hollywood many years back. I managed an apartment complex in Beverly Hills, right behind Barney's Beanery. It was right behind Barney's Beanery. And I had a yard sale. And I had taken my hammer, my pliers, and a wire, and I'd gone and I'd put my signs up where they needed to be. And there was this place on Hollywood Boulevard. It was a automotive store. And I put my sign up on the telephone pole right outside of his business. And this guy comes out and he starts giving me a ration of garbage about how he has to pay $150 to put a temporary sign out there. And yet people, yard sale guys, can put a sign up and leave it up there for a couple days. And he's tired. He's probably going to rip down my sign. And I turned around to him. I said, I'm 250 pounds and I got a hammer in my hand. And you're telling me that crap? You touch my sign and we're going to dance. He didn't touch my sign. But, you know, if you're going to do something like that, say something like that, don't say it to the guy's face for crying out loud. The whole thing here is consideration, common sense, okay? Use your common sense. Don't set your stuff up to where it can fall and break or get stolen. Don't ask more than the stuff is actually worth. You know, if you really want to get top dollar, and here's the plus thing. If you really want to get top dollar for your garbage, put it on eBay. Because then you have the whole world to draw from. I have, if any of you have gone to casinos, I don't know if they still have them in Reno or Vegas, but they used to sell, or you could win these coins called strikes. And they were usually silver, and they were commemorative coins for that casino. I had a collection of them. I had at least 1,000 of them. We'd gotten them because we traveled all around the United States when I was a gunsmith and showed off our wares and our work. And one of them was from Comstock. And I tried to sell it. I couldn't get $20 for it, so I figured, what the heck? And I put it on eBay. I got $250 from a collector in Japan. Two collectors in Japan were bidding against each other. I ended up getting $250 for it on eBay. Of course, you pay 10% of that to eBay, but still. So if you think you got something that's special, put it on eBay. Take some good pictures of it, put it on eBay. But we're talking about yard sales now. So advertise your sale properly as best you can. Put it on all the free papers you can. And by the way, if you're into that NSA intelligence gathering website called YouTube, or Facebook. They have, what do they call them? They have these websites there that you can go and advertise stuff, local stuff for sale. There's all kinds of different websites out there. There's all kinds of them out there. And just, if it's free, use it. But you can go Craigslist. That's the simplest thing to do. Look for your throwaways. Go to any Safeway or large supermarket, and on the way out, you'll see these trays, these bins of all these throwaway newspapers. Pick up one of each. And then see. Most of them are free. Free for you to advertise, or cheap for you to advertise. Like the Nicholsworth cost me $7. $6 or $7 to advertise for the yard sale. And that's a good investment. Make sure your signs are competently done and readable. Keep them simple. Don't put everything on them. I mean, my God. Some of the things people put on their signs are just mind-blowing. I like the one we just saw. It says, "Put my junk in your trunk," and then an arrow. That was good. I loved that one. I really did. Okay, now, I have a website, armchairsurvivalist.com, that you can go to, and I have show notes. I haven't been putting the show notes up yet because we just don't have the time. And this is taking, like this show alone, used to be I just do 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon. Okay? No, this is we're talking 8 hours now. And this isn't adding in all of the research that I do and that kind of stuff. So it's taking more time than I'm used to. I've got to figure out ways to get it down a little bit, and then I can start putting my show notes up. So usually when I talk about something, I have somewhere to point you so you can verify everything I'm saying. And yes, I have people, in fact, most of them say, "I don't need to read the verifications because I trust you and I know that you're not BSing us." Well, that's great, but I got all this work that I do, you know, sometimes, because I truly believe I don't want anyone to take my word for what I'm saying. I want you to research it. But sometimes, you know, I just get so upset when people say, "I don't need to do it. I just listen to you." But when I start putting the page up, the show notes page up, I will have links to everything. I'll have all kinds of links to yard sale stuff, how to do a successful yard sale, how to advertise for yard sales, special tips for signs and you know, stuff like that. All right, I want to talk about differences between prepping and survivalism. People don't quite understand the differences. So I want to clear some of that up. Most of us are preppers. In fact, most people who are halfway intelligent are preppers. Prepping is the act of getting ready for emergencies, large and small. This is not just riots and tsunamis and earthquakes and asteroids striking the Earth and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's also about in case you lose your income or in case you lose a job and you don't have enough money to eat, or you break your back. These are things that have really happened. So prepping is basically thinking ahead and getting ready for emergencies or situations. And a prepper basically gathers supplies, gear, food, learns certain skills like first aid and CPR. People who think ahead are called preppers. What the Boy Scouts say, you know, it's be prepared. Well, that makes you a prepper. Somebody who prepares. Literally, that's what it makes. And usually, and there's different levels of that, of course. There's people who just normal people in the Midwest, farmers, who all year long, while they can grow their food, they do so. They sell 2/3 of it and keep a third of it. They can it. They freeze it to make sure it's edible during the winter. That's prepping. It's not a big deal. It's common sense, or it used to be. I actually had a Dutch company come from all the way from Holland to interview me because Europe has no idea what a prepper is or a survivalist. They literally have no idea. And I said, you know, just talk to your grandparents. They'll tell you what it is. They don't do that. They don't have respect for their elders anymore. Survivalism focuses more on skills than supplies. A survivalist can generally, they can hunt, forage for food, fish, snare, MacGyver things. Remember this series, MacGyver? He had the ability to extrapolate the knowledge that he had to fit into certain unknown situations that he's never come across before. So a survivalist isn't focused on comfort. They are more focused on emergency situations and being able to survive in episodes of hunger, not enough food, of danger, maybe in a jungle somewhere, or a situation where there's dangerous beasts that want to eat them, or humans that want to harm them. So a prepper is somebody who puts stuff aside in case of emergency. A survivalist is somebody who can use the stuff. A survivalist is somebody who can start a fire with minimal equipment. A survivalist is somebody who can create a habitat out of snow and a Christmas tree, or out of dirt. A prepper is somebody who has a tent or has a home or has a camper and it's fully stocked. A survivalist is somebody who knows how to live off the land. When I was 12 years old, I was with the Klamath Indian tribe, and I did the rites of manhood, and that's where you live for 2 weeks in the woods with nothing but a breech cloth, sandals, and a knife. Now, being the token white boy, I got to do it in the summer. And of course, I've gone through the training, and I watched everybody else do this, and it was real simple. First, I found a place, I found water, and then I found shelter. And in Northern California, finding water is almost by accident. It's that there's so much tributaries and creeks and ponds and rivers and stuff. And then I found food, a whole berry patch, and then I made myself. So I had enough. I had food that I could live on, okay, and a place to stay. Then I wanted to be able to get small game, so I made a bow and arrow with blunts, what they call blunts arrows, so there's no head on them, just a round knob, and so it would shock a rabbit or a squirrel or a bird, and then I'd just kill it. And I'd been taught how to tickle for trout. And that's an interesting thing. That's where you squat in a creek that you know has trout. You put your fingers together in your hand, and you squat with those down in the water, and you just barely move your little finger now and then. And the fish would come up and go, "What the hell is that? Can I eat that?" And then you throw it up onto the beach, onto the shore. That's called tickling fish. That's what a survivalist does. A prepper opens a can of freeze-dried fish. Okay, so that's what a prepper is. And a lot of people just don't get the difference. It's confusing because it is the same and it isn't the same. It's different. A prepper's primary plan is bugging in, is hunkering down. And like I tell people, when the Schumer hits the fan, you're not going to be up in your mountain cabin. Most likely, 90% of us will be sitting in an easy chair wondering what happened to the lights. So you need to be able to survive in any situation, not just at home. And this is what I do, is I teach people how to survive in various situations. And your job is to take the data that I give you and stretch it to suit and fit whatever situation you're in. Like, I was teaching a group how to start a fire with a little magnesium block, like the U.S. Air Force fire starter kit. It has a ferrous rod embedded in magnesium block. And you take your knife and you scrape it on the rod and it throws up sparks. Even a novice can start a fire in the middle of summer. What I was doing was showing these people how to do it in 6 feet of snow with only a knife and a block. You have nothing else. So I showed them how to do it in a dry area where it was warm. I said, "Oh, look, see here, you can pick up this tinder here, and here's some leaves, and here's some little twigs, and here's this, and here's that. And then you set it up, and you do this, right?" So then we went to where it was 6 feet of snow, and I said, "Now do the same thing." Out of four of the people, three of them go, "Well, we can't. We don't know how, snow doesn't burn, does it? It does it?" And I didn't say anything. The fourth guy kicks aside the snow, digs down, and he starts finding Spanish moss and pine needles and leaves and sticks and twigs, and he's picking all of those up and making a big pile. And then he found a piece of bark that was about 6 inches by 6 inches, and he sits that on top of the snow. Now he wipes all of this stuff down, and he sits that on top of the snow. The other stuff that he found was actually underneath pieces of bark on the ground under the snow. So it was pretty dry. So he made himself a little pile, and he scraped a whole bunch of that aluminum or that magnesium on there, and then he struck a spark and he started a fire on top of the snow. So you take what you learn and you extrapolate to suit the situation. So basically, a prepper is a guy that stores the stuff, and a survivalist is a guy that can use it. But you are both. You store the stuff and you know how to use it. So that's the difference. When somebody says to you, are you a prepper or are you a survivalist? You're able to tell them the difference. And that's what I'll do. I will tell you how to store things. I'll tell you how to cook things, how to start fires, put them out. I'll tell you how to think in an emergency situation. But I'm only going to tell you a little bit because everybody's different. See, emergency situation in northern Idaho is not the same thing as there will be in San Francisco or San Antonio or the Keys in Florida or in Phoenix or in Portland, Oregon or on the Mississippi. Every place is different. So what I give you are guidelines and I give you concepts. And you use common sense and your willingness to survive, and you can. See, that's the thing. You can't just have the data. You have to be willing to use the data. It's like pulling a trigger on a gun in self-defense. You can't just have the gun. You got to be willing to use it. And that's a big problem that we have in all over the world. And that's what humans, that's one of the problems humans have. They have the information on how to do something, but they're afraid to do it. Or they have the goods to survive, but they're afraid to try and use them. What I've found over the years is that many people are, how do I put this? They're hesitant in using the data they have and the equipment they have. They learned how to use it. Oh, I don't know. It could be anything. It could be everything, anything from a firearm to a car. Well, let's use a car, okay? I taught my sister everything about a car. I taught her how to drive it. I took her in the parking lot. Taught her how to drive it. Taught her how to stop, how to turn, how to steer it, how to back up, how to use the turn signals. I mean, how to do everything handling the car. I even showed her how to change a tire, how to do a tune-up. I showed her everything that about a car. Okay. Then I decided to drive to San Francisco with her. Now, we're driving a 1961 Mercury Comet. Simple car. Six-cylinder automatic. And in the city of Davis, I stopped and I said, okay, I want you to drive now. So she gets in the car and starts it up and checks the mirrors and all the stuff, and then she pulls out in traffic, and she never once looked in the mirror. She just adjusted it. She almost got hit. And a car honked at her. She covered her eyes with her hands and slammed on the brake. She had had all the training that you could possibly get, but she wasn't willing to use it. Instead, she let her animal brain, if you want to call it that, take over. And that's the problem. That's why in the military you are trained and you do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until it's a habit with you. And that's how it should be with your equipment that you intend to use in anything in life. You use it enough to where you're comfortable with it and you feel competent with it. That's the same with food. You need to feel competent with food. There's so many people. I had somebody come in the store yesterday, and she said, yeah, I know you guys aren't selling long-term storage food anymore, but I have about 10-year supply of this stuff that I bought, and I don't know how to cook it. Well, we sold the books, you know, how to cook dehydrated foods and freeze-dried foods and all of this stuff, and she never bought any of the books. So now you can find it all on YouTube. So that's the thing. She had all the equipment, but she didn't know how to use it. And that was the problem. That is a problem that a lot of people have, and it's not just with food. It's with all facets of your life. You have these people that are referred to as, and I quote, armchair survivalists, who have all kinds of equipment, all kinds of gizmos and toys, but they don't know how to use it. There's a lot of people who have ham radios, and they have no clue how to use them. They just have them, because all survivalists have them. There are people who have all kinds of firearms and ammunition. They've never taken them out and shot them, much less cleaned them. There's people who have all kinds of food. They don't know what to do with it. I remember years ago, a woman came into the store. A gentleman sent her over here. He was the head surgeon at Kootenai County Hospital here. And he knew about us, and he sent her over here to get a certain package of food, which is about 5 years' worth of food. And they're all in number 10 cans. So she bought it all. We delivered it to her house, helped carry it downstairs. Then she looks at me and she goes, how do you open them? I go, what? She goes, how do you open them? She'd never used a can opener in her life. She came from a rich family. She never didn't even understand what a can opener was. So I sent her over to the dollar store. I said, go over there and buy 20 can openers. And she did. But that's funny. This is, people have something and they have no idea how to use it. Or they have something and it ends up needing other things to make use of it. This is why everything you should have and you think you're going to rely on in an emergency, you need to know how to use it. And we're back to not just know how to use it, but be willing to use it. We did a show a couple years back on ham radios, how to use them, how to communicate with them, and all of that. And I had one of my listeners come in, and he had me order a dozen specific ham radios for him. So I did. And I said, "Well, do you have your license yet?" He goes, "Oh, I'm not going to get a license. In an emergency, I'll just use them." That's fine. Do you know how to use them? No, but I'm sure I'll figure it out. That's not the right attitude to take. That's being incompetent, willfully being incompetent. It's like clothing. You need to know what to use, what when to use it. And people put together a bug out bag, and the bug out bag is set up for Florida. So it's got an extra pair of shorts and underwear, and that's it. But then the guy moves to North Idaho. Forget it. You want a bug out bag up here, you better have long pants and boots and some flannel shirts, because it gets cold, real cold. Even, our temperature got down to 50 the other night. That's really nice at that temperature. So when you're going to get stuff, you're going to need to know how to use it also. And you have to be willing to use it. And there's a story here, and it's not make-believe. And this is about 10 years ago. Two special forces soldiers, a male and female, they were married. And they had a 3-year-old child, and they decided to take a trip. Now, this is in the middle of winter. And they're going to drive from here, North Idaho, to Nevada. It's a beautiful trip down Highway 95. It's gorgeous. They took the wrong turn, and they ended up stuck in the snow for a week. And to make a long story short, they lived, all three of them, but the man and the woman both lost various fingers and toes to frostbite. These are special forces. They're supposed to be trained. In special forces, you're not just trained to use items. You're trained to think different. You're trained to be willing to use items and willing to extrapolate the data that you've been taught so that you could use it for other things in an emergency situation. These two people weren't. They were a perfect example of the new politically correct military. And I hate to say that, but that's the truth, and that was all over the internet. Other people saying the exact same thing. Regardless of that. All right, so you need to be able to use the stuff that you have. And we'll talk about all of this later. All of this we'll talk about later. Now we have... Todd wants me, the engineer. I cut the show and I send it to Todd. And Todd plays it every Sunday. If you go to armchairsurvivalist.com/chat.html, in other words, go to the chat room, you'll hear my show. He plays it every Sunday, 2 to 4 Pacific time. So on the East Coast, it's 5 to 7. So you can go to the chat room and you can listen to the show. All right, so I want to talk a little bit here about our store. Because that's why I can do this show, is because I sell stuff, and that pays me to do the show. We're in Hayden, Idaho, on Government Way, and if you know me and listen to my show, you know that's funny as hell, on Government Way. I've had so many people call me on the phone, want to send checks or something, and they ask me, where do I send the check? And I tell them the address on Government Way, and they look at me like, you are kidding, right? Government Way? Yeah. So look, we've been in business 35 years, and we've gone through different things. I was a master gunsmith for 25 years. We were the second largest emergency food supplier in the United States for many years. And then when the manufacturers realized they could go direct to the public and make more money, well, they did, which shut out all us little guys. Even some of the largest ones are out of business. My good friend was the freeze-dried guy. He's disappeared. He's gone. He's toast. His family's gone. That's it. They're out of business. And they had warehouses in three cities. So we've changed. And we've always been in nutritional products, and we have settled in that area now. And I do, being an investigative journalist, I have spent many, many, many hours investigating the products that we carry. I don't carry anything just to make money. We don't do that. I could be a millionaire a dozen times over if that's what I did. We sell stuff that people need. We sell stuff that people can use. Just to give you some ideas, oral problems, mouth problems, gum problems, teeth problems. We have Uncle Harry's toothpaste, which is the base of it is bentonite clay. This is the best toothpaste in the United States, as far as I can find. If I find something better, then I'm going to carry it. Not only does this stuff help lightly, whiten your teeth, it has antimicrobials in it. It has colloidal silver, colloidal minerals, oregano oil. It's phenomenal stuff, and it's extremely concentrated. It's on our website. And our website is se1.us, so that's Samuel Edwards, the number 1.us. And you click on health products or nutrition on the left-hand side, and you can see what we got. We have colloidal silver. It's not run-of-the-mill. The machine to make this stuff is $1.5 million, and it's not my machine, I can tell you that right now. It belongs to a company. We've been buying from them for 20 years. I didn't believe in colloidal silver till this stuff cured my foot fungus that I picked up in Vietnam. This wasn't normal foot fungus. This was the some kind of hybrid Vietnamese gonorrhea toe rot. I don't know what they call it, but they gave me shots and pills and drugs and everything. Nothing worked. Colloidal silver killed it in 2 weeks, and that was 20 years ago. We have the strongest antimicrobial known to man. It's pure. It's imported directly from Turkey. Oregano oil. We carry that. We carry three different topical pain relievers. In fact, one of them has three different snake venoms in it. I carry a line of sublingual pills. These are pills that go under your tongue because there's a lot of people out there that cannot take pills or capsules. So that's what these are for. 100% daily vitamins, B12, B6, folic acid, D3, melatonin, DHEA, this stuff like that. We have our own line of vitamins. These are the Infinity brand. If it is Infinity, it is the strongest that you can get, and it has the best prices. Our prices are beyond compare. We have the best prices in the United States. We're not here to get rich. We're here to help people. And that's what we do day in and day out. We're closed on Sunday and Monday, even though the phones are open every day till 8 o'clock at night, Pacific time. Remember that, Pacific time. So don't be calling me at 5:30 in the morning or 10:30 at night, my Pacific time. And I'll give you the number in a minute. That's what we do. We're here to help people. I've got stuff, you know. Being a talk show host, you've got to watch your throat. And I have, there's a friend of mine, good friend of mine, Vinny, USA Prepares. He's on GCN. Last year, got a cough so bad he tore his stomach. I found out about it, called him up. I'm all pissed off because he didn't tell me. That's what we do, is help people. So I sent him a bottle of this old Indian wild cherry bark syrup. One dose, whew, stop the cough. This is not lightweight stuff. We don't sell lightweight stuff. You have a thyroid problem? I have a product here that was invented by a doctor in the 1800s to cure thyroid problems. Hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism. It's called Lugol's iodine. It's right here. Doctors know about it. They're not going to tell you because they don't make money at it. So I have it here, and it's on the website. We have a line of hypoallergenic soaps, 5-star soaps. It's hypoallergenic, and it's extremely concentrated. And of course, we have our line of CBD. And CBD, you guys don't know it, but you will. It works on all mammals, from mice to moose, dogs, cats, horses, goats, sheep. You got an arthritic dog? This is easy. This stuff works on them real well. Just the oil, you know, as long as you get it in them, in their mouth. Even put it on their food. You have a neurotic cat? Well, we can take care of that too. And all humans. The stuff is a lifesaver. We have people. We're open today. We were open today. I'm here after hours because I'm still trying to figure this show out and get the timing down. It ain't working. I can tell you right now. But anyway, we have people all day long. People would come in, and I love it when this happens. an example. A woman comes in. She's standing at the I have a little display on my counter of CBD oil, and the woman has multiple sclerosis, and she's shaking and nervous and in pain. And I'm talking to her about this, and I'm giving her all the data and telling her what the stuff does. And our website, if you want to go to it, is cbdsupply.us. Charlie Bravo David Supply.us. You go there and you read the links. And I have an article I wrote for the newspaper here. It's on there, and the links are at the top of the page. And the bottom link, I think it's titled CBD, The Myth, The Truth, and Barnum & Bailey. Because it's a fad, right? And every corner coffee hut is selling this stuff. Except they're not selling this stuff. What we have is different. And we'll talk about that later. And you can find out about that on the website, in fact. But if you read that article, nothing else but that article, and followed a couple links that are in it, you'll know more than 95% of the people in the United States about CBD. It is real simple. So, the company is Survival Enterprises. You go to se1.us. That's Samuel Edwards, the number 1.us. And you can poke around there and see the stuff that we got. You can call us 7 days a week. No, is it 7 days? God, I feel like there's 12 days in a week. Call us 7 days a week at 800-753-1981. 800-753-1981. Now, if we don't answer the phone, you can leave a message. But generally the phone is answered from 9 a.m. till 8 p.m. 7 days a week. Unless I'm out at the casino having dinner. And then you're on your own. Just leave a message. But we're here to help. And that's what we do. And that's what I'll probably be doing until the day I die. But I was telling you, the woman was here today, and she multiple sclerosis, and she's shaking, and she's concerned because there's so much hype and crap about CBD. And I'm explaining to her the reality of it. And I have a little flyer I hand her, and I say, this is why this is different. This is why this stuff will help you. And while I'm talking to her, three separate people come in, and they interrupt. Say, excuse me, can I have a bottle of the 750 milligram, please? Okay, here. Another guy, can I have a bottle of the 1500? Here. Another guy goes, can I have some critter care, please? That's for the dogs. Yes, boom. And she's asking each one, what does that do for you? And this one guy, and this is a $150 bottle. He looks at her and says, I wouldn't be walking if I didn't have this. Because he has a spinal bifiditis or some kind of a spinal cord deformation that's causing intense pain. And the next woman has anxiety. This is easy. This stuff, that's easy. You got anxiety, that's easy. And so she goes, I have anxiety. Not anymore. As long as I use this, I take 5 drops a day, boom, I'm done. I'm done with it. And the other one says, I have a 13-year-old lab that had hip dysplasia. The doctor said, hip dysplasia, you're going to have to operate or just ignore it, let it die, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, the hell with that. I started giving him this, and now the dog thinks he's a puppy again. So we have different products, all right? Now, until I figure this all out, I won't have an ending music. It's just going to be me as the armchair survivalist signing off till next time.